It is always a pleasure and a privilege to come and speak for the First Colony Church. Been coming for a long, long time. Since Ronnie was four, I've been coming out to this church. It's just been great. I was kidding him last night about how young he is. He thinks he's an old guy, and I said, you don't know what old is yet. I'll explain that to you. I hope that you really, really appreciate him and his wife, Martha. They are awesome human beings. As I was saying this during the first service, I realized I was almost verbatim quoting what I said the last time I was here, so I'm going to go ahead and say it again. I get to speak for churches all across America, all kinds of churches, Churches of Christ, Assemblies of God, Churches of God, Baptist churches, Methodist churches. So I get to see a lot of churches and a lot of ministers. I'm telling you that this man is unique. He is different. Sometimes when a guy's been in the church for a long time, you kind of take him for granted. I'm here to tell you that this is one of the most gifted and godly men on the planet, and you should be honored that he is with you. And if you're thinking, I bet you say that to every church you speak for, no. Some churches, I never mention the minister at all because I want to forget him. But this is a great guy. At the beginning of the year, we say, okay, what are we going to do in a year? People start making all kinds of resolutions. I want to talk about something a lot more comprehensive than a resolution. I want to start with a Bible story. If you happen to have a Bible with you, it's in the 37th chapter of the book of Genesis. There's a fellow by the name of Joseph. He has 10 older brothers. Joseph, being born as his father was older, the father tended to like him somewhat more, and that made the other brothers very jealous of him. Anybody here ever experienced any sibling rivalry when you were growing up at all? I have a brother who is 6 years older than I. When he was 14, that made me eight. When he was 14, he had appendicitis, but they misdiagnosed it. It almost killed him. By the time they figured out what it was, it almost killed him. And back in those days, if you went to the hospital, you stayed for a few days anyway. And he was there for quite some time. And when he finally got out, it was just kind of terrible. Even though he was 14, he hobbled around like he was 90. Well, they told him he had to walk, and so we lived on this old dirt road in the country, and he walked up to the end of that road, and he turned and started walking back. Now, what I'm about to say, ladies, there's no way I can make you understand this. It won't make sense to you at all. All the guys will just understand it immediately. When he started back down the road, I thought to myself, wonder, could I chunk a rock that far? You guys get it, right? There's no animosity. It's just a skill thing. And so I picked up a flat rock that I knew would really sail with the wind, and I threw it. Now, I'm not that good of a thrower, but that was perfect. Hit him on the scar. Oh, it was therapeutic. He had hobbled up that road. He ran back down the road. And to this point in my life, it's still the hardest I've ever been hit. So we know that sometimes sibling rivalry exists. These guys took it to a level much beyond most of us. They hated him. Now God, when Joseph is 17, gives Joseph a dream. The interpretation of the dream is that someday his brothers would bow down to him. And in verse 5 of Genesis 37, it says, Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. Now, when we talk about a dream, understand that it's different than a wish. People have all kinds of wishes. All kinds of wishes. Do you guys hear Dave Ramsey on the radio out here by any chance? The money guy? Every once in a while, I'll go on Dave's radio program with him. His office is right around the corner from my office. He's a really great guy. He actually laughed out loud when I said to him one day, does my retirement plan of buying the right lottery ticket not hold water with you? You buy a lottery ticket, you have a wish. Okay, things are going to turn out. A dream is not a wish. A dream, as we're defining it, is something that God puts within you that you cannot let go of. That it motivates you, it drives you, it focuses you. Dreams focus, wishes don't, but dreams do. And his dream was that someday he was going to be a leader to the point that even his brothers would bow down to him. Now, they took umbrage to that. First, they thought they would kill him. Then they decided they would sell him into slavery, and so they did. He winds up off in Egypt. He's sold to a man named Potiphar, who is a captain of the guard of Pharaoh. Now, Joseph was a very skilled young man, a very gifted young man, so he kept doing all the things that he could do, even though he had not been trained in that. You see, he was a sheep herder from a sheep herder family. But before long, he wound up running all of everything that Potiphar owned. Mrs. Potiphar took a liking to him, and she decided to seduce him. Now, if any guy would ever have a justification, in his own mind at least, to think, I know this is wrong, but I think I can get away with it, or I think maybe even I should be allowed to do it, it would be Joseph. Why? Because here he was with this dream that God had given him that someday he would be this great leader. He's serving God with all of his heart, and what does it get him? He winds up being sold into slavery. I think it would be human nature to go, wait a minute, you gave me the dream, I'm trying to do what's right, and now I'm here. And so if ever I could justify my doing wrong, I think that would be the time to justify doing wrong. This woman's making a pass at me, I think I'll go with it. But he didn't. If you remember that old story, she was very offended that he didn't. And so she told her husband that Joseph had tried to rape her. Potiphar puts Joseph into Pharaoh's prison, kind of an ego thing rather than putting him into the regular prison. And Joseph still stays true to God. And while he's in this prison, he winds up running the whole thing eventually, by the way. Now you look at this and go, is there some point to this? There really is. If we had gone to Joseph when he was a slave and said, okay, son, you said you had this dream that God gave you, that someday you're going to be this great leader, and here you are a slave, what do you think of your future now? I think that any of us might be saying, well, obviously, it was not really a dream from God. But Joseph, I'm quite convinced, if we had interviewed him, would have said, oh, I'm going to be a great leader someday. Boy, wake up. You're in slavery. You will be a slave when you die. Your life is over. It is done. And he would say, no, I'm going to be a leader someday. Well, why didn't you sleep with that woman? Because God is going to make me a leader someday. And that behavior is inconsistent with that dream. I don't think it was just the fact that he was being pure that helped him resist the temptation. In my belief system, my opinion, what helped him stay pure was the fact that he was convinced that God had something in store for him that he had not yet accomplished. And I don't want to do whatever might mess that up. I'm headed there. Then when he winds up in prison, if we'd come back to him and said, hey, son, what's your life going to be now? Oh, I'm going to be a leader someday. Oh, wake up. Started as a slave, and now you're in prison. You're going to die in prison. Your life is over. It's done. No, I'm going to be a great leader someday. What makes you think that? Well, God gave me a dream. Understand a couple of things about dreams. If God gives you a dream, we're not talking about a fantasy or a wish. You understand a dream. You say, what does it mean? I think it's when you have this, well, some people call it a calling. It's when there's something inside of you that you just can't give up. You just can't let go. It drives you. And no matter what happens, you stay with it. And if God has given you that dream, then in some way, in some fashion, it's going to bless and benefit other people. It's going to do what needs to be done. But expect opposition. When he told his brothers, oh, and by the way, if you have a dream, be careful who you tell it to. Because if you tell it to somebody who doesn't have a dream, they'll resent the fact that you do, and they'll use it against you. Or if you tell it to somebody who does have a dream but doesn't have the courage to follow through on it, they will do everything they can to stop you from succeeding. So when he told his brothers, the guys that should have been on his side, the guys that should have been encouraging him, they became his enemies because they hated his dream. And then when that didn't stop him, the devil, I believe there really is a devil. I'm convinced there's a devil. One of the books I wrote is called Seeing the Unseen. It's about spiritual warfare. I really appreciate Ronnie mentioning that they have my books in the bookstore. Don't feel compelled to buy them. But if you do, my brother can have the operation. And in this book on Seeing the Unseen about spiritual warfare, I write about the devil I'm convinced really exists and his angels on this planet. And when they saw that Joseph had a dream from God, when the brothers' ridicule didn't stop it, he did everything he could to stop Joseph in any other way, including slavery and prison. Don't think that when God gives you a dream, that there's a golden street to walk down to get to it. If God gives you a dream, expect opposition all along the way. From everywhere you can imagine. And then when we'll find out whether you have a dream or a wish. Now, why did God let him do that? Why did God put him through that? Well, you see, Joseph came from a sheep-herding family. The thing that God wanted Joseph to do down the road was save the Israelites from starving to death when this great famine was coming. Now, what he would have to know to be able to stop this starvation from happening is he'd have to learn grain farming. Well, he's a sheep herder. He doesn't know grain farming, so God's going to teach him farming. Where did he learn farming? As a slave. The Bible says he took care of Potiphar's house and fields. That's where he learned how to be a farmer. And then he had to learn politics. He had to learn how to interact with Pharaoh and the other leaders, politicians, if you will, of the day. Well, where do you better learn politics? In prison. They all go there eventually. I've actually had politicians walk up afterwards and say, I didn't appreciate that. Well, I don't appreciate where you're going. But in prison is where he learned, if you remember anything about the history of that time, Pharaoh, this particular Pharaoh was capricious. He would throw people in prison, take people out of prison. So what's Joseph learning in prison? He's learning Pharaoh, his strengths, his weaknesses, his idiosyncrasies. You see, the day that Joseph comes out of prison and becomes the second most powerful man in the world because he interprets Pharaoh's dream, that day he has no learning curve left. The day he starts his job, he knows how to do it. God has spent years training him to do what he needs to do. Any 17-year-old boys here? Okay. If I had time, I'd pick on you. I'm just going to illustrate instead, okay? When I was 17, if God had come to me and said, Joe, yes, sir, I'm going to make you the second most powerful man in the world. What do you think the average 17-year-old boy would say if God offered that? Cool. I can do it. Now, I don't know what you're like at 17. That's what I was at 17. Don't be offended by this. One of my favorite bumper stickers said, hire a teenager now while they still know everything. So at 17, I'm sorry, at 17, I would have said, yes, I could do it. At 64, which I'll be next month, if God came and offered it, I think I would be asking, what's involved in this? I mean, I need to know the parameters here because I've lived long enough to know that what seems to be a great deal sometimes turns out not to be. So explain. And here's what God would have said to Joseph. Well, first you've got to learn grain farming. Yeah, where am I going to learn that? Slavery. Is that a euphemism for an A&M? No, you're going to learn. It's a joke. No, it's slavery. You're going to learn as a real slave. Oh, my. Then what? Well, I'm going to put you in a dungeon. A real dungeon? Yes. Why? Well, you got to learn grain farming, and you got to learn how to work with Pharaoh, and that's where you're going to learn. If Joseph had asked that, he might have asked this question. Okay, Lord, how long is it going to take? 13 years. Okay, 17. How long is 13 years? It's a lifetime. Whereupon Joseph might have said something like, I really appreciate the opportunity, but would you take Reuben, Judah, Issachar? I'm much too pretty to go to jail. Because the Bible says that Joseph was well-built and handsome. Everybody named Joseph is well-built and handsome. In his own mind. So, God didn't ask, God just sent him. Because if God gives you a dream, God will give you the training to fulfill the dream, which could be a formal education, but it can also be the experiences of life. Do you understand what I'm saying here? That if God calls you to a dream, and if you have the courage to stay with that dream, in spite of all the obstacles, in spite of the people who should be supporting you, opposing you, in spite of everything that goes wrong, and how many times you would look around and any common sense would say, give it up. It's over. It's done. I can't do it. That you would say, no. No, I have to stay with the dream. God gave it to me. I'm staying with it no matter what they do to me. It's the dream that God placed in me, not one I chose for myself. I'm thinking, well, okay, one story. Let me give you two other quick, very, very quick Bible stories in the book of Judges. One was a guy by the name of Gideon. You may remember having heard the story of Gideon. The Midianites had conquered the Israelis. Gideon was just a guy who was a farmer. God came to him and said, I want you to put together an army and throw the Midianites out. You also may remember in the story that there's a famous story about a fleece, that I'll put the fleece out, make everything else wet, keep it dry. God did it. Okay, was that really you? I'll put the fleece out, make everything else dry, make it wet. God did it. Even to this day, I hear people sometimes saying, let's put out our fleece. I go, you need to read that story again. God made him pay for that doubt, by the way. God says, put together an army. And so he did. He put together 32,000 men. They're going to fight 135,000 trained and well-equipped soldiers. If you were a betting person, who would you bet on? The trained, equipped soldiers or the farmers and shopkeepers who beat their plowshares into swords? The odds are a lot, 4.2 to 1. Doesn't look good. God says, you got too many soldiers. What? Tell them if they want to go home, they can. How would you like trying that within the army? If you don't want to fight, you could go home. Thank you. 22,000 left. 10,000 men still with Gideon. The odds are now 13.5 to 1. Things are getting worse. God says, you have too many men. What? Cuts it down to 300. The odds are now 450 to 1. 450 to 1. I think if I were Gideon, I would say, could I speak to the angel in charge of accounting? Are you guys not counting what's going on? You say, why did you do that? My opinion? It's because of that fleece. You doubt me? Well, let me show you what faith really is. I'm going to have you attack 135,000 men with 300. He did, and he won. I don't know about you, but sometimes when I just watch the television, the news, even other stuff, I sometimes feel like we're so outnumbered, we shouldn't even have a chance. So many people in the world not only are not Christians, but who are against Christianity. Some who are violently against Christianity, some who just ridicule Christianity. And you look at it and say, we're becoming fewer in number day by day. In the percentage of the world, our percentage is decreasing. We're massively outnumbered, massively overwhelmed. That's right. But if God calls you to a dream, the odds don't matter. If God calls you to a dream, God will give the victory. You may be saying, okay, all right, I understand. But like in the church world, sometimes women don't get as good a role. So show me a woman in the Bible. Okay, same book, Judges, Deborah, she's the judge. And so here are the Midianites that have conquered them. She calls a guy named Barak, and she said, I want you to put together an army and go fight these guys. Now, the bad guy's name is Jabin. He has a general named Sisera. Sisera has 900 iron chariots. That'd be equivalent to 900 tanks. She said, go fight him, throw him out of the country. He said, okay, I'll go if you go with me. Because he was a man's man. God said, through Deborah, okay, Deborah. Deborah says, I'll go with you. But because of what you just said, God's going to give the victory to a woman. Great battle ensued. The bad guy, Sisera, the bad general, escapes. He's running away. He goes by the tent of a lady by the name of Jael. By the way, I love the scripture there. She saw him and she said, come in, my Lord, come in. He comes in and he says, hide me. Don't tell anybody I'm here. She put a cover over him. He said, give me some water. Instead, she gave him milk. She gave him milk because she wanted him to sleep. And when he went to sleep, this lady, Jael, took a tent peg and a hammer, put the peg next to his temple, and drove it all the way through his head into the ground. I love what the Bible says here. It says, and he died. The victory was given to a woman. It makes no difference if you're a boy, like King David when he fought Goliath. If you're a man, if you're a woman, if the odds are against you, if the odds are for you, what all this says is, if God gives you the dream, God will give you the victory. Well, how do I know what my dream is? Oh, and can you give me any examples from the modern day? Let me give you one example from this day time, at least my lifetime. I was born in 1949, born in a farmhouse close to Rose Hill, Alabama. in the living room, because that's where the fireplace was. You understand, it was February. I'm as country as you can be. There's a lot of things about the 1950s I really liked. Anybody old enough to remember the 50s? Anybody remember the 60s? See, I read if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. But back in the 50s, it was an idyllic sort of time. For example, we never locked our door at night. We just hooked the screen door so that the wind wouldn't blow it open, and we all felt very safe. And if you did something bad 8 blocks away, that mama spanked you. And by the time you got home, your mama knew through the mama network, and then she beat you like a dog because the other mama had to spank you. Anybody remember those days at all? I look back at that. Oh, I worked at my father's gas station. Actually, it was a service station. For 32 cents a gallon, I pumped your gas, checked your oil, and washed your windshield. You're all going, oh, man, how do we get back to the 50s? Let me tell you the other side of that. At my father's service station, there were 3 restrooms. Male, female, colored. What? Oh, people whose skin weren't the same color were not considered equals, you understand. They were treated very differently. They weren't allowed to use the same restrooms. Oh, if you went to the mall, and there weren't malls, but if you went to where the stores were, if there was a water fountain, they had 2 water fountains, white and colored. People whose skin was not the same color of mine could go to my school if they cooked my food or they swept the floor. But they couldn't sit beside me in the classroom. Oh, and they couldn't go to church with me either. Except for the rare occasion when you had a gospel meeting and all churches were invited. Otherwise, they were not allowed to be part of your church. I grew up in the state of South Carolina. Back in those days, if you were 16, could pass a 3-day test, you could drive a school bus. I drove a school bus in high school. Our quarterback was a guy named Charlie Waters, who later played for the Dallas Cowboys. He'd go through the hall with a football on his jacket. I had a bus on mine. The first 3 young ladies of color who attended our school rode my bus. I tried my best to be their friend. They wouldn't speak to me. They were afraid of me. You understand? Because I was white. One lady, Rosa Parks, was on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. The law in Montgomery was if you were on the bus and you had skin that was of color, if a white person got on the bus, they got your seat. She refused to move. They arrested her. A great boycott took place in the city of Montgomery where people of color and some of the whites refused to ride on the buses, which was costing the city of Montgomery, by the way, a great deal of money. Reverend Ralph Abernathy had a big rally at his church. So many people came, they opened the windows so the people outside could hear. And various pastors from the black churches in Montgomery were getting up and speaking one after another. A new man had just moved there, a young guy by the name of Martin Luther King Jr., who had just recently gotten his doctorate. Dr. King always spoke from a prepared manuscript. He wrote out his speeches word for word. He got there late that night. Reverend Abernathy saw him and said, "And now we'll hear from Dr. King." Dr. King had not prepared a written manuscript. Dr. King had not expected to be called on. Dr. King is almost in panic. This is not what I do. He walked up, stood behind that pulpit, opened his mouth, and when he finished, had become the de facto leader of the civil rights movement in America with one speech that was not prepared. Have to wonder if God has something to do with that, don't you think? You say, he had a dream? Or did he? He actually made a speech by that name, I Have a Dream. Google it. I have it on my wall in my office. Oh, you need to understand, I was brought up to believe that people of color were not my equal. Do you understand? When I was young, I was told that Dr. King was evil. It was only after I was an adult that I began to discover what a great man he was, as I faced my own prejudices that had been trained into me. I mean, I knew there was something wrong with the way we treated people who didn't look like us, but it was my culture, so I accepted it. Anybody else live through that? So Dr. King led the movement. He is my hero, by the way. Not my only hero, but one of my heroes. Anybody ever see those films from what happened in Selma when they crossed that bridge? Dr. King led that march. They were going to march all the way to the Capitol steps of Montgomery, Alabama. Governor Wallace was governor at the time, and he sent the troopers and the dogs and the gas and the batons. All the films were in black and white, and as those folks behind Dr. King walked across that bridge, they gassed them, and then they beat them, and they turned the dogs loose on them who just chewed on them. A man who later became my friend, I was just a boy when it happened, a man who later became my friend told me he was on that bridge. I said, how could you do it? You knew what they were going to do to you. And Dr. King taught nonviolence. How could you walk into that? He said, oh, Joe, if you had heard him, that man you had to speak into your soul, we would have followed him into hell and fought Satan himself. Was Dr. King a perfect man? No. But neither was Joseph or Gideon or Barak or even Deborah. She was not a perfect woman. God has never called but one perfect man, and that was his son. Everybody else he called, all were and are flawed. Do you understand? So if you want to take apart the man's life, you can find things wrong. Oh, physically, he wasn't very big. I never met him. I wish I had, but they have one of his suits in the international terminal at the Atlanta Hartsfield Airport. And from his suit, you can tell he just wasn't a very big man physically at all, but he was one giant of a man who had a dream that one day black children and white children could play together. Or to use one of his quotes, so that a person would be judged not by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. Isn't that brilliant? And people tried to destroy him. Let me let you hear some of that in his own words. It'll take a couple of minutes. Gentlemen, could you play that first clip, please?
The telephone started ringing and I picked it up. On the other end was an ugly voice. That voice said to me in substance, "Nigger, we're tired of you and your mess now. And if you aren't out of this town in 3 days, we're gonna blow your brains out and blow up your house." And then I got up and went back to the kitchen and I started warming some coffee, thinking that coffee would give me a little relief. I sat there and thought about a beautiful little daughter who had just been born about a month earlier. She was the darling of my life. I'd come in night after night and see that little gentle smile. And I sat at that table thinking about that little girl and thinking about the fact that she could be taken away from any minute. And I got to the point that I couldn't take it any longer. I was weak. And something said to me, "You got to call on that something and that person that your daddy used to tell you about. That power that can make a way out of no way." I discovered then that religion had to become real to me and I had to know God for myself. And I bowed down over that cup of coffee. I never will forget it. Oh, yes, I prayed a prayer. I say, "Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause that we represent is right. But, Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage." Seemed at that moment that I could hear an inner voice saying to me, "Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth. And lo, I will be with you even until the end of the world."
I've had a lot of people do a lot of things to hurt me, but so far none have threatened to kill my children. Can you imagine the courage it would take to continue to do what he was doing? Well, he would change his telephone number, but all the operators were white. It didn't take long for the ones who hated him to get his next number. He was in jail many times. He was in fear of his life constantly. But he had a dream. Not just worth living for, but a dream worth dying for. April of 1968, he went to Memphis. There was a garbage man strike there, and he went to support them. Listen to what he said.
I got into Memphis, and some began to talk about the threat that were out, or what would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live,
I've stood under that balcony. Tried to imagine what it would have been like that day. The Lorraine Motel, Memphis, Tennessee. The men, whether it was a man or a conspiracy, I don't know, the men who killed him were evil. They were also idiots. Because if they had listened to this man's message, he was talking about people being good, loving each other, standing for what's right. I'm not about to claim that all prejudice has been done away with, because it is not. Not toward skin color, not toward ethnicity, not toward gender. There is still prejudice. But in America today, your plight, no matter who you are, is so much better than it was in the 1950s, because that man had the courage to follow his dream. I would have loved to have met him. Now, here's my question to you. Do you have a dream? If you don't know what it is, don't fabricate it. You don't want to follow your dream. That could destroy you. A dream from God that will focus you. If indeed God is giving you one, and he does to many, then you will be trained for it in some fashion, formally and informally. Look at your life. See what it is God is preparing you for. For 13 years, Joseph just knew he had a dream, but didn't understand what he was being prepared for. If some of you, and college students and high school students and teenagers, if God picks you, man, woman, and you are men and women, not boys and girls, and he puts that dream into your heart, expect to pay dearly for it. Expect to have people that should be on your side turn against you and fight you at every step. Expect the devil to destroy you if he possibly can. They will come at you in any way they can to humiliate and to discourage. The reason that we don't see more people with dreams is because most have the courage never to fulfill it. They just don't have the courage. The obstacles come along, and they disappear. But the man or the woman who accepts that dream, who embraces that dream, who follows that dream, will pay dearly. But God will use him or her to change the world. Father, you're so kind and gracious and merciful. Thank you for Joseph, for Barak, for Deborah, for Gideon, for Martin Luther King Jr. Thank you for Ronnie Norman. Thank you for the men and women in this room that you have blessed beyond measure. God, make your dream clear. Defeat us when we follow our own dreams. Support us when we follow yours. Give us the strength to endure. Through Jesus.